All right, you are awake. Appreciated the sermonette. Marcus speaks well, looks at us, connects with the audience, gives a good message. If you want to give a sermon, come visit us in Nashville and let us know what Sabbath you'll be there. Or just move to Nashville. Let me start my watch here for an hour. There we go. They tell me it takes a little time to get up to Chattanooga to speak, so we won't hang around much afterward. Lucretia and I went by to see Bill last evening, and he seemed the same to me. I told him that he didn't seem any different. I was a little disappointed. I was hoping for improvement. I told him that he would be, that it would have made him a nicer person, but he thought that was humorous. And he seemed completely, his memory was, I didn't see, his memory was better than mine, because he could remember things that I couldn't. He could remember people that I couldn't. So he's really improved. The only thing he is having, he's left-handed, although he's more ambidextrous, and he was having trouble catching things with his left hand, which is normally he uses his left hand to catch. When he played baseball, he played right-handed. You know, a lot of left-handed people are ambidextrous, so. But he was having trouble catching things with his. He would try, and it would bounce off his hand. He would go for it. But he was getting closer. He said he was trying. When it was further out, he'd start closing his hand, but he still was having trouble catching things with his left hand. But his mind was complete. How many of you have been up there, have seen him, have visited? Anybody? A few of you have. Was it recently? Was he fine when you went up to see him? Yeah, he seemed. He knew who we were, and he didn't throw us out, so it was nice to be there. You have to come in the next half year if you're going to come, because I won't be pastor after that, they tell me. In Nashville, they're going to let me retire. Roy wants to retire. But that young whippersnapper is half a year younger than me. So he knows he has to let me retire before he can retire. You know, he doesn't want to be in Chattanooga. That's not a secret. He tells everybody. He doesn't want to be in Chattanooga. He was hoping to stay in his house here. And Norma even more does not. Norma and Roy were in my class. They were a little younger than me. But she wants to be back in this area. So anyway, they're talking about letting me retire in 2015. I'll be 75, and my memory is not all that good anymore. And I used to have dark hair when he came to visit. By the way, Marcus, I also like a haircut. That's my summer haircut, only I don't have anything up here to cut on a lot of it, but I like that. That's a good haircut. My son David likes it. He cuts his hair that way. He'll be 50 next month. Our son, our little boy, will be 50. I want to talk I don't know if you record this, but I'm about to start to give the sermon. So you can leave that in there if you want. I don't care. You know, if it offends them at the home office, so much the better. Okay, that's how we are. Those guys are younger than me, so. I want to talk about sickness. You know, when I first went out in the ministry, Roy and I both went out the same year in 63. And almost everyone was being healed. In fact, I gave a sermon on that. That's not the sermon I'm going to give today. But I came to the conclusion that God was calling people for so many years. I mean, we couldn't keep up with all the new people, starting new congregations. And right after I was ordained and we went to Baltimore and I did most of the anointing, Guy Engelbart did most of the counseling after services. I did the anointing. I can't think of anybody that wasn't healed. Can't think of us all. I mean, we saw cancers disappear. We've seen a woman who was almost blind, and God restored her sight. And she was an older lady. She was having trouble studying, and she was lived in Washington, D.C. area on the Maryland side. And she said, please, she was new, and she was having trouble reading the Bible. I anointed her, and next time we saw her, she said, I can see your face for the first time. And God was calling. Now I think he's choosing. Many were called, and boy, there aren't many being chosen, are there? Wow. Could be discouraging, couldn't it? And all this sickness. Now, I want you to think of something. God created vultures. We have two kinds of vultures here in the southeast. There may be some more a little further south down toward Florida, I don't know. But we have turkey vultures and black vultures. At least we do in Tennessee. We've got turkey vultures and black vultures. You can tell the difference. Turkey vultures, a little larger. But they both have one thing in common. They can eat almost anything. Diseased, hard things. And it doesn't bother them. And doctors are trying to study those creatures to see if they can learn anything from them that way can get out of that and stick in our bodies so that we can overcome all kinds of diseases like vultures do, buzzards. And any of you know the difference between a turkey vulture and a black vulture? That's not part of the sermon. Has nothing to do with it. Any of you know the difference? Turkey vultures are a little larger, and they have a red head. It's reddish. So like a turkey, I guess. And there aren't any feathers on their heads. You know that, right? They don't have feathers. So you see, you know, you have also, there's a vulture lover right there. See? She knows, why don't they have feathers on their head? Well, if you were sticking your head in what they stick their head in, you wouldn't want feathers either, would you? So the black vulture, you say, well, they're all black. Turkey vulture, the rest of it's black, but a black vulture is smaller, and its head is black, not red. And on its wingtips underneath, there's a little light spot. They're a smaller vulture, anyway. God could have designed us to be that way. But you know, he designed us to get sick. He designed us that our bodies get sick, especially if we abuse them and eat all the junk that we have in America. It's terrible, all the sickness that we have. And you'd say, well, why are God's people getting sick and not being healed? I want to look at some verses about that. I think you know these, but it's good to look at them again. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 20. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 20. Now, I would suspect that you know these verses. By the way, I think you may also know that Stan Martin is hoping to be here, is supposed to be here next Sabbath. And I have lined up four different men to come here in January. There are five Sabbaths. I don't have anybody for the 31st yet. I would like to see Bill Cowan get so well that we can cancel those men coming down. That would be nice, wouldn't it? I mean, His mind sounded clear enough to me last night that he could easily give a sermon. But he is unsteady on his feet, and his left side's giving him a little trouble. So we're certainly not going to encourage him. In fact, I told him, you just rest and take it easy. We've got other men who can do this for you. But I'd like to see him be well enough. But God may not. Lots of sickness going on in the church and in the world. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 20. Here's Paul's last letter. Think of all, Paul, God did so many miracles, healings at the hands of Paul. And he says, Erastus stayed in Corinth. You know, more people need to name their little boys Erastus, right? Just to upset them. It's a little better than naming your son Sue. Erastus stayed in Corinth, but Trophimus I have left in Miletus sick. Well, Paul, why didn't you heal him? Why didn't God heal him? God doesn't heal everybody. Doesn't he? Here at the end of Paul's ministry, being hauled off, and he's going to be executed in Rome, going to have his head cut off because he was a Roman. That was considered, that's better than crucifixion. And he says, I have left in Miletus sick. Now think of that. You know this verse. Maybe it's been brought out before just to show that God's people aren't always all healed every time they ask. And Paul certainly would have prayed for him and anointed him. And he had to stay behind, sick. Now look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 23. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 23. Now I'm going to ask in a moment, why? Why has God designed our bodies to get sick? I don't think God made Adam and Eve to just automatically get sick. I think it's degeneracy that we get so sick. And we bring it upon ourselves. When we first started going to Nigeria many, many years ago, and then they started actually getting on the internet. And one of the men over there, Oladari Akimbo, he was on the internet, and we were sending the prayer requests. Well, most of the prayer requests were from the United States. And he said, you know, the grass isn't greener on the other side. We always think over here, wow, if we could just go to America. But he said, it's incredible how many of Americans have cancer. He said, in Nigeria, he said, the average Nigerian doesn't know anybody who has cancer and doesn't know anybody who knows anybody who has cancer. They have infectious diseases. They have malaria. They have yellow fever. They have things like that. But one thing, they couldn't afford sugar. They couldn't afford white sugar and white bread, so they were eating more natural things. And we're over here just slurping in sugars and refined carbohydrates. And I don't know, did you see on 60 Minutes, Dr. Sanjay Gupta did a special on sugar showing how it feeds cancer? Any of you happen to see it? One person saw that. Okay. It also lends toward dementia. So, we're getting more and more dementia, more and more cancer, and we're slurping in more and more refined carbohydrates. And over there in Nigeria, basically no cancer. And it isn't. And of course, we live in a chemical soup. Well, they get a lot of... They do get a lot of exhaust fumes over there, more than we do. You get on the highway and it's just, they don't have the clean emissions, and trucks are just spewing it out, but they don't have cancer. Now they're beginning to get a little more prosperous, and they're eating more sugars and getting more sodas and eating more white bread and white rice. I mean, the staples for years over there have been cassava. It's a root. And tapioca is made of cassava. And they have a yam. It's not like our yams. It's a big brown thing, but with white center. It's another root. And that's their staple diet in West Africa. And they tend to have beautiful teeth, no cavities. Now, on the other hand, you go to the Philippines where they eat white rice, and they've got diabetes and every kind. You know how many prayer requests come from the Philippines? They're living off of the white rice. We do that to ourselves, but God designed our bodies that we can get sick. And what's the benefit? What's the benefit of getting sick? In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 23, even back then, they were getting sick. Don't know what was causing it then. But he tells Timothy, no longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities. My wife likes red wine, so this is a good verse for her. And she has some infirmities, so. And I do too. But anyway, Timothy, what a wonderful guy he was. Paul wrote the Philippians and he said that he wanted to send Timothy to them. He says, I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus, but you know his proven character, that as a son with his father, he served with me in the gospel. You know, I wish that could be said about me, but, you know, Timothy, what a wonderful character he had. What wonderful character. What a wonderful servant he was. And he had frequent infirmities. Do you think Paul prayed for him? Do you think that Timothy prayed? Do you think others prayed for Timothy? His mother, maybe his grandmother was still living, who were faithful women, taught him the truth. I think so. Why did God not heal Timothy? What was there to be? Another example is Philippians chapter... Well, I could have read about Timothy. It's in Philippians 2, verses 19 through 22. But then I want to read Philippians 2 anyway, verse 25 through 30. Philippians chapter 2, verse 25 through 30. And this is about Epaphroditus. There's another guy in the Bible named Epaphras. It's sort of like the difference between Frederick, my name, and Fred, which is what most people call me, Frederick. Friedreich is German, means peaceful rule or peaceful ruler. Names don't always fit, do they? But Epaphras was the short. Epaphroditus actually means like Aphrodite. You know, epi is near, Aphrodite. So if you were Epaphrodite, you're like Aphrodite. If you're Epaphroditus, you're also meant you're beautiful. So mom and dad had this beautiful baby and said, oh, you're like you're beautiful. Epaphroditus. And it says, I was just filling time while you turned. Philippians 2, verse 25, yet I considered it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need. Philippi was the city that would, the church that would send Paul money, goods, to help him in his ministry when he was down in other areas, like when he was in Corinth. They sent some money down to help him out, or whatever they sent. And in this particular case, Epaphroditus had brought the goods as my brother, fellow worker, fellow soldier, your messenger, the one who ministered to my need, since he was longing for you all and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. For indeed he was sick, almost unto death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. We don't sorrow as those who have no hope, but we do sorrow. And he said, God had mercy on him. Therefore I sent him the more eagerly, that when you see him again you may rejoice, and I may be less sorrowful. Receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness. God let him almost die. Almost die. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem. I mean, what do you say? Well, here's a guy, he's sick, God didn't heal him right away, almost let him die. Maybe there's a spiritual problem with the guy. No, it says he's fine attitude, apparently. Hold him in esteem. And notice verse 30. Because for the work of Christ he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me. I mean, here, something about his trip apparently caused his sickness. And so here was this man serving, and in his service, serving God and God's servant, and it caused him to get sick and almost die. So I would think, wow. I don't know if you remember that the example, don't need to take a lot of time with this, but Jeroboam, king of the northern 10 tribes, was an evil king. And because he was an evil king, God said that he would die, and it would be a bad death, and it would be a death where all of his children would die, and basically all of them would not even be buried, but the birds would eat them, except for one son who was going to die. In fact, he did die. He was the first one to die. And why was he the first one to die? Anybody happen to remember? It was because God said, I see one lady nodding her head. Does that mean that you remember it, or it's I'm boring you enough that you're nodding off? Which is it? So anyway, it was Jeroboam's wife disguised herself and went to the prophet and tried to hide that she wasn't the wife of Jeroboam. And he said, when you put your feet back in the city, your son will die. And he's going to die because, and I will just read it to you, you don't have to turn there. It says, Arise, therefore, go to your... This is 1 Kings chapter 14, verse 12, 13. Go to your own house. When your feet enter the city, the child shall die, and all Israel shall mourn for him and bury him. For he is the only one of Jeroboam who shall come to the grave, because in him there is found something good toward the Lord God of Israel in the house of Jeroboam. God let this boy die because there was something good in him. And we would think, well, if there's something good in somebody, God's going to save him. Not always. Sometimes somebody good is allowed to die. I mean, how many remember how God saved Peter when Peter was in prison? And the angel came, told him, they were all praying for him, got him up, went out, the gate opened up, he knocked on the house. They thought, man, is this, you know, a spirit out there? Looks looks like Peter. And he was saved. But what happened the day before? James was killed. God let James, one of the 12 apostles, the first 12, not the brother of Jesus. That's a different James. Not the one who wrote the book of James. But the apostle, James. God let him be killed. Anyway, there's an example that I think is really wonderful. And it's in 2 Kings chapter 13 and we'll start in verse 14. 2 Kings chapter 13 and verse 14. And this is about Elisha. Elisha did so many miracles. Resurrected a child from the dead. Had an army after him, and they were all struck blind. He took Elijah's cloak and struck the water. The water parted and he walked through on dry land. Just miracle after miracle that God did through his servant Elisha. And it says in 2 Kings chapter 13 and verse 14, Elisha had become sick with the illness of which he would die. So God lets some of his most admired and wonderful servants, through whom he can do tremendous miracles, and let him get sick, and then he got sicker until he died. Then Joash, the king of Israel, came down to him and wept over his face and said, "Oh, my father, the chariots of Israel and the horsemen." It just, you know, it's coming to an end. Well, notice down in verses 20 and 21. 2 Kings chapter 13, verse 20. Then Elisha died. This amazes me, this story here. And they buried him. And the raiding bands from Moab invaded the land in the spring of the year. So all these bands were there. Verse 21, so it was, as they were burying a man, they were taking a guy out to the same burial area, same graveyard, that suddenly they spied a band of raiders. And they put the man in the tomb of Elijah. They were in a hurry, so they just let him down into the tomb of Elijah because they were in a hurry. And when the man was let down and touched the bones of Elisha, he revived. and stood on his feet. God does some really amazing things that I just think, boy, is that unusual. Is that, now that is just something I would not have expected. I have seen him heal people who weren't in the church who were about 90 years old, and then children not healed. I anointed a lady not in the church, in her 90s, great-grandmother, mother of a member, and the grandmother of a member, and the great-grandmother of a member, and she was in the hospital and in Little Rock, Arkansas, St. Vincent's, and the member called me, and she said, my mother's in the hospital, and she has a blockage in her aorta that goes down into her leg, and it's behind her intestines, and it shut off the blood to her leg, and the gangrene is going up her leg, and her foot has turned black. And the doctors say, if we, and I mean, the foot wasn't hurting because it was dead, but where the gangrene, where it was dying, coming up the leg was hurting. She's not a member, and Mrs. Manus, the member, said, now, my brothers are in the hospital room, and they're Catholic. So I'm driving over to St. Vincent's, and I'm praying to God to help this elderly lady. It seemed like she was about 90, 91. Help this elderly lady to be out of pain, to, you know, not suffer, to die. So anyway, I go up there and go in. Here are these sons, Catholic sons, sitting around. This lady, she's in pain. They said if they tried to go into where the blockage was, it would kill her. They'd have, you know, this was, well, I've been in Nashville 28 years, so it was before then. So they didn't have as good a way to get into old people and take out the blockage. They don't have a good way to do that now, but, I mean, it was even worse then. So anyway, they said it would kill her, and I'm anointing her. And I don't say anything about heal. I just ask God to grant her peace, to take away the pain. And that's a clue. If you're ever in the hospital and you ask to be anointed and the minister just asks God to grant you peace, you may want to say, may I interrupt you? Would you mind using the word heal? You know, just that's a clue. So anyway, I drive home and they call me and say she is completely healed and her foot is completely normal. Now, why are some of the children I've prayed for never been healed? And Mrs. Manus' mother was healed. Mrs. Manus is no longer living, but she has two children still in the, they're in United, so that's nice that some of them are still being faithful. But here, look at this with Elisha. This dead body that touched Elisha's bones was revived. But Elisha's bones, which were touching Elisha's bones, Elisha wasn't healed. Elisha's bones were there touching each other, and he wasn't resurrected. But God so respected the memory of his servant Elisha, that when this body touched Elisha's bones, you know, if I had been in that town and someone I loved had died, I'd say, let's take him out to Elisha's tomb and try those bones again. See if God still respects them. I think that's a strange story. I think the story of Mrs. Manus' mother, I don't remember her name, wasn't Manus. But anyway, I bring this up just to say that God allows sickness. But here's the point. You know, we all seem like life is just going to go on and on and on and on. Like the sermonette. And We all know we're going to die. But not today. See, if I live another year, I would have outlived my older brother, who died at 75. If I live a year and a half. I've already outlived two grandparents. I don't know any ancestor of mine who lived to be 90. But it's not today, you know. I feel okay today. And then when suddenly something happens and people say, well, I'm sorry, Mr. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so, but this is terminal. Well, we've always been terminal. We've always been terminal. But we don't really feel it until the doctor tells us, you've got so long. I give you, you've got 2 weeks. You've got a month. And, wow, then it hits us. But when we're sick, it helps us to realize that we're not eternal. Doesn't it sort of bring you back? It brings me back. I've had hepatitis C. I've had malaria. And it really is a humbling experience. With a hepatitis C, I should be dead by now. Normally, you can live about 10 years. It's been over 10 years now. It's been about 10 years. And I'm alive. And the doctors can't find any hepatitis C in me, which is really different. I got over it in 3 months. And sometimes people can get over it in 6 months, but they're never fully over it. I mean, you're not supposed to ever be fully over. Hepatitis C is the rest of your life. And it shouldn't be but 10 years if you do well. But I can remember being a teenager, it just seemed like I would live forever. I would never get old. I would never die. Didn't we all feel when we were teens that we were just bulletproof? But when you're sick, you don't feel that way. And sickness brings us to a reality that is humbling. It actually brings about a positive reaction to be sick. I want to read that. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 9. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 9. Roy Holiday was so healthy in college. He had a doctor check him out. Doctor was there at the... Mr. Armstrong had brought him in to teach nutrition. And he'd been head of a hospital. But he'd been on the operating table, I think it was 5 times, and he said, something's wrong with what we're doing. So he started looking into nutrition. And he taught a class on nutrition, Dr. Owen. Dr. Owen checked out Roy, found Roy was so healthy. I think it was Dr. Owen who told me. He said, I told him that in the resurrection they were going to have to hit him over the head with a 2x4 to stop his body because he's so healthy. I think he's got a few health problems now. Seems to be doing okay. You might know his health problems more than I, but, he should be turning 74 about right now. Is it this month? Or last month was his birthday? Somewhere in here that he turned 74. But look here at... This is amazing for Paul. I mean, a lot of the verses I've read to you amaze me. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7, "And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, A thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. You and I think of Paul as someone who was so incredible, and God used him so incredibly and did miracles. And would you think, if this verse were not here, would you think that Paul could have had a problem with humility, not having it, or pride? You'd think, oh, not Paul. But God allowed this to happen. Why? This is in the Bible. This is not Paul's false humility. He's not saying this out of a false humility, just saying, oh, I'm being humble here. This is in the Bible, inspired, Word of God. Lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, God allowed a serious problem to come to him. In the flesh. Thorn in the flesh. Verse 8, concerning this thing I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. For my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. So here we see God allowing sickness for a good purpose. Too bad Bill Cowan's not sitting right there. I could say, Bill needed this. Bill, you've been too puffed up. My job in life is to aggravate people. That's part of my calling, so. Anyway, my sicknesses have been good for me. My weaknesses, from the top of my bald head to the gout in my left foot, and problems in between, a little sciatic on the right side. Boy, it was really bad for a while. It's a lot better now. I've learned to roll up a towel and put it behind me in the car. Keep my back swayed a little bit. And I can put something underneath in the bed when I sleep on my back. There, it really has helped. But, you know, I get out of the car. Doesn't matter. Lucretia and I both get out of the car slowly. And we've learned. You put 1 foot out, then you put the other foot out. Don't use the foot inside to push yourself out. You turn, you put both feet out, then you lean over and stand up with both legs. And when you get in, you turn and you sit down. And then you bring one leg over and the other leg over. Anybody here know what I'm talking about? You understand this, huh? See? You know, is it good? You know, it's good for me. It's good for me to have these things. It's saying, Fred, you're wearing out. You better look to God. You better stick with Him. You're not going to hang around here in this flesh. This flesh is wearing out. The sermonette. He doesn't look that old. He only looks bald because he gets a razor on his head there. And there we are. My grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. And look at 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Verses 6 through 10. I don't think of Bill Cowan as prideful. But all of us have trouble with pride. There's not a soul in this room. Pride is like a pack of wild dogs, African dogs. and they're right behind us. We slow down for a moment seeking humility, they're just going to gobble us up. We got to get it from God. He's got to give us humility. And I don't think of him as puffed up, but he's human. I guarantee you, this is good for him. My malaria was good for me. I happened to be in a hotel in Africa that actually had hot water. And my legs hurt me so bad because all those little plasmodiums in my bloodstream were just all through my legs, and my legs just ached painfully. And usually when my legs ache, I can get in a hot tub, and here was a tub with hot water in Africa, in Benin City, Nigeria. And I got in that tub of hot water, and it didn't help a bit. It just did. I mean, it wasn't like you relax your muscles. My legs ached just as much. And I can remember lying in that tub and looking up at the ceiling, and I said to God, because he was above the ceiling, sort of, and I said, I'm in pain now, but I will be out of pain. And when I am, I will praise you. And I praise you. And I'll praise you more when I'm out of pain. And it took a little while, and I had the medicine. Should have taken it the night before, but I didn't realize it until morning when I was going at both ends and in pain. So I would drag myself out of bed and head to it's so nice that there was a toilet there. I think it might have even had a seat on it. It had a seat. Sometimes it's better in Africa to not have a seat. They're cracked, and you know, when they're cracked, they pinch. And you can clean the china very nicely. Just having, you say, oh, you have to sit on the china? That's such a blessing to have something. And if the water's running, if you actually have water and can flush it. But I'd go in that bathroom and it was a question. Man, which end am I going to aim at this thing first? Well, I knew which end to aim first. Actually, one causes bigger problems than the other. And, you know, that was good for me. That was good for me. I'm just not invincible. I'm not bulletproof. So, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 6 through 10. I think I already gave you that verse. For it is the God who commanded light to shine out of darkness, who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us, having earthen vessel, flesh, bodies that give us trouble, that when we abuse them, they give us more trouble, and when we feed them garbage, they give us more trouble, and say, oh, this tastes so good, give me another piece of that, you know, whatever it is with the sugar and this soda that we have with all the sugar in it. And some say, I just don't like whole wheat bread. And I just don't like brown rice. And I just don't like honey. So give me this other good tasting stuff. We have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us. By the way, I'm not encouraging you to eat junk here so you can be humbled. No. It'll work. Most people don't start eating well until they're sick. You know, then they say, oh, it's time to start getting sick. You know, eat right. Notice verse 8. We are hard pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. persecuted but not forsaken, struck down but not destroyed, always carrying about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. What he's saying is that when we have troubles in the flesh, it can work a good work. And all of us need it. All of us need to be humbled. And everybody has physical problems, even little tiny children these days. You know, we're just getting so degenerate. And we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us. If Bill's back here giving sermons, the excellence and the power is of God, not of Bill. Notice in this same chapter, starting in verse 16, and we'll read to the end of the chapter and then just a couple of verses in chapter 5. So 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16 to chapter 5, verse 2. Therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing. Yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. That is, hopefully, as we have physical trials, we're turning to God. And God does intervene. Not as fast as we would like and not as often as we would like. But And God is testing and trying, and I think God is sifting at this time. He's choosing. He did a lot of calling. He's doing more choosing, I think. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. I hope that's so. With me, I hope that's so. With you, with Bill Cowan and Betty and their son, and the family, it's a trial for them. But the inward man is being renewed day by day. We say, oh God, we're asking for this, but your will be done. For our light affliction, here is the man who had a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan. And he said, and he was stoned, beaten, and he says, our light affliction, which is but for a moment. So when you and I are lying in our deathbeds, that is our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So if somebody's sick, that's not because they're a bad person or a bad Christian. Elisha got sick and died. Paul got sick. He didn't die of his sickness. Is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. The prayer request list can really become discouraging, can't it? But we can't let it discourage us. That's part of developing faith, where we say, God, I just give it to you. I can't handle this. I can't bear all this sickness. I give you, you know, and then whoever all these people are who are on these prayer lists. You know, I have the prayer list. I pray for them. I keep that. They give us every 6 months another list of all the people that are on there. My wife and I each have a copy. We don't have great memories. We kneel down, open that thing up, and pray for these people. Can't pray for them all in one day, can you? But you just have to, say, God, this person is yours. They've been sick a long time. She belongs to you. The things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal, and our bodies are temporary. You want to know how to create more death? Have more children. Every child you have will be another eventual death. So if you, we had four. So there'll be four people die from that. And then they had, now we've got nine grandchildren, and they're all going to die. And it's, you know, I don't tell them that. Oh, that we let them know that, but we don't just go around, you're going to die. Uh-huh. So, you know, they're children. But my son David is turning 50. David, you're over halfway there. There are some ancestors that lived into their 90s. They're named in the Bible, though. I don't know any who were, you know, this side of the Bible. I don't know any who made 90. For we know that if our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed, we have a building. There's the difference. We're in a tent now, and God is preparing a building. The body that we will get that is spirit is a building. And this is just a little tent that we're living in. We have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven. Of course, the more sick we are and the worse we are, the more we groan for that heavenly body instead of this one. Okay. And it hasn't even been... We still have 3 minutes, so I could take the time to tell you about our grandchildren, right? But then we'd have to hang around, and we'd love to do that and listen to you tell about your grandchildren, which is always pleasurable, and show us pictures. Of course, some of you can just point and say, well, here's my grandchild sitting right over here in church. That's nice. Don't know if I'll be back. I actually came to Rome one time and spoke years and years ago. None of you remember it, do you? Do you remember that? That was many years ago. That's when you were tied in, where I believe, with Gadsden and Birmingham. And I came down and visited all three. So I don't know how many years ago would that have been. Man, that was a long time ago. And so if you give that long more, maybe I'll be back. Maybe you'll hear about the funeral instead. You'll say, well, Fred's gone.